Hello and welcome to White Line Wireless, where we are continuing our series on the AIF-11, reading through Cal Corner's Cricket's Diary from 1919. Today we have week two of the AIF-11 tour from the 25th of May 1919. And joining me again today is Cam Boyle.
It is great to be back again, Anth. I've been enjoying this series so far. Like, obviously, the AIF teams, the Australians, they've blown off a little bit of the rust in their first game last week and played some good cricket in front of the 10 men and the dog. But let's see how they go in a couple of more serious games against some more well-established teams.
Yeah, so in week two, they have a match against Essex at the County Ground in Leighton, and that's a three-day match. And they also go and play Cambridge University at Fenner's, which is another three-day match. So 6 days of cricket this week for the Australians.
And not a huge amount of time off for them either, because they're playing this game against Essex on the 17th, 18th and 19th of May, and then get 1 day off before heading to travel to Cambridge, where they're playing on the 21st, 22nd and 23rd. You know, cricketers nowadays, they don't realise how easy they've got it. Six days of game in 7 days.
Well, and remember, they had to call the last game. They had to call stumps on the last game because they had to go and get the train to get there. So I think the last game was the day before.
Yes, it was. But they've just managed to scrape into Leighton in time to play Essex.
So they have rolled up. Cow Corner is going to take us through the week. After the match against the old men at Attleborough, the team entered upon the serious work of the tour against our first county in the form of Essex. It was not only our first important engagement and Essex's first game since 1914, it was also the first opportunity many of us had to see whether the enthusiasm for the grand old game of cricket is returning. We need not fear, as over 4,000 came through the turnstiles on the first day. Although Essex have a nucleus of pre-war players, they were able to bring out some sound young men. The Cornstalks completely outplayed the Essex men. Johnny Taylor in particular punished the bowlers freely. Captain Charles Calloway defended with skill on his way to the first century of the tour, while Jack Murray gave a fine display of free, fearless cricket. The fielding of Essex cricketers did not anything like approach that of the Australians. It was not bad, but it was slack, for the most part without life, and never a warm source of encouragement to the bowlers.
Now, can you just run us through, for listeners everywhere, what are they referring to when they call the Australian team Cornstalks?
It's Cornstalks. So it's something in Australian slang at the time, it tends to mean a young guy. But in English slang at the time, it tends to just mean an Australian. And it's got something to do with, you know, young cornstalks sprouting up tall or something. I'm not 100% on the deep background of where the cornstalks comes from, but it's definitely been around since like the 1870s or so. And is one of those nicknames that the English come to call the Australians. Back to the letter or the diary. Following the game, in accord with New World ideas, there were brief speeches and sporting fraternisation. Most impressive was Reverend Gillingham, as fine a specimen of muscular Christianity as anyone could wish to meet. He is a fine preacher, but his reputation on the cricket field gives him a better chance of saving souls than all the eloquence in the world. Reverend Gillingham, you can see there's a picture of him here.
And he is indeed a fine specimen of muscular Christianity, which I must say is a pair of words I never thought I'd actually say together.
Muscular Christianity?
Muscular Christianity.
It is a thing.
It is a thing. I mean, you talked about it in the last match as well, sort of still being one of the sort of defining aspects of, I guess, Anglo-Saxon malehood at that time.
Absolutely.
Muscular Christianity.
Yep.
And it's fascinating to actually see those words written in print from an author at the time.
Yeah. And so Gillingham, he was the opening batsman. So we have here the County Ground 3-day match.
So the side to lead off this game for their first game in 5 years was Essex, starting the batting. And like in the game against LG Robinson's 11, the first innings wasn't a great one for the English team. Essex were dismissed for 169. The only sort of score of note was Turner, who managed to get 64 not out. The bowling once again was shared amongst the Australians, with Gregory this time opening the bowling instead of Docker getting a fine spell of 3 for 52. Docker and Collins getting 2 wickets each, and Sterling getting 2 wickets in his 1.5 overs. The Australians then took up the medal with a bat and put on a dominating performance. They scored 434 all out over 100 overs at a rather sprightly rate of 4 and over. With the
definitely for the time.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Mm.
The nice 112-run partnership from Taylor and Callaway. Callaway getting 126, opening the batting and playing through.
We must also note the efforts there of Tremlin for Essex, managing to pick up 7 wickets over 39.3 overs. It was fairly expensive. He got 7 for 171,
mm-hmm.
but still a worthy effort in a struggling Essex attack. And then Essex came back with the willow, a long way behind in the game, about 270 runs behind in the game, and they could not make the Australians bat again. They were dismissed for 151, well short. No scores really of note. Perrin was the top scorer with 43, and there was at one stage, potentially, this has not been recorded yet.
It wasn't a I'm pretty sure this wasn't a hat trick. I imagine that Cow Corner would have written about it if it was. That wasn't a hat trick, but and we, you know, we don't have the balls recorded. I think Cow Corner would have said that, but yeah, Gregory just ran through the middle order. Perrin holding up one end. So Perrin was what's he come in at? It's come in at number 5, and then Gregory has taken the next 4 wickets, and Perrin ends up not out. So everyone's just collapsed around him, and they've gone 6 from 120 for 122. 8 for 122 and all out for 151.
Yes, so a comfortable victory in the end. Gregory was obviously the star of the attacking 448, but a great effort as well by Herbie Collins getting 3 for 20.
All right, so back to our diary. Next up, it was over to the historic FP Fenner's ground against the youngsters of Cambridge. Although their first serious game of the season, the Cantabs had already had a few trial matches to find their form, more than we had at any rate. Some put the colonial destruction of the light blues down to a lack of practice on the locals' behalf. But our boys have been fighting too, and have not allowed their cricket to grow rusty. They have found time to play the game and fight as well. Although the wickets are of the English variety, it's been quite dry for May in England, and our lads have adapted well to good wickets. Pelham Plum Warner reckons the Australians a better lot on hard wickets than Sid Gregory's 19-12 combination. But there is some concern that such surfaces cause injuries, although it's what Australians grow up on. Although the team comes first, it was nice to see Callaway give Nip Pellew an opportunity to get his 100 in his first match of the tour at Fenner's. Even in a team, there is sometimes need for some exceptional personal feats. Something the military cross on Bill Trenery's uniform can vouch for. Or perhaps the men he saved as he wielded his Lewis gun in the trenches of France like he wields his willow on the pitches of England. Gregory proved he was worthy of that name, smashing 17 off one Fairbairn over, including a hoist over the fence to send up the 500. Young Jack also provided another one of the highlights of the game, dismissing Morrison and Morris with successive balls, sending their stumps flying through the air like the battered great trees of Flanders. Although he was unable to perform the hat trick, he gave the light blues a fright by clean bowling 5 of the 6 wickets to fall, whilst only 30 runs were added. Thanks to a fine last wicket partnership on the part of Rotherham and Nauman, the light blues, after all, did not make a very bad response to the formidable total put together by the Australians. It was not to be, however. The diggers quickly dismissed the home side and were all out before 3 o'clock, allowing us all to retire to the pavilion for more merriment and good fellowship. So I just want to jump in and add something here that Cow Corner hasn't been quite as explicit as he probably could have in this, that young Jack Gregory is indeed one of the Gregories.
Okay.
And so at this stage, it's something crazy. I've got this figure written down somewhere, but until the 1920s, I think there's one test match without a Gregory.
There we go.
Because there's Sid, you know, one of the legends, and
David Gregory as well.
Yeah, and so there's Sid, his brother, and then the next generation, there's three or four of them as well. And, of course, Jack Gregory goes on to be quite a legend, but nobody knows who he is at this point. Nobody's really seen him play. He kind of disappeared to the country before the war. I think didn't really want to be a part of, you know, I can imagine you're having a famous family and you're like, oh, it's too much pressure and...
Well, he more than steps up to the family's name in good time, does Jack? But that's sort of spoiling the rest of the story for another time.
Yes. So back to our letter, our diary. Now the Aussies have two wins against two counties under their belt. They have showed they are a lot better side than some of the critics appeared to imagine. The English were looking favourably upon a return tour later this year, but must be reconsidering it now, given that several of our best players have already returned home, if that is the correct term to employ. Not to mention those who did their service on the home front. The matter is now under consideration with the MCC committee, and we should have a decision in the next few weeks. So well have the Aussies done that a match between them and an England 11 is mooted. In this season of reconstructive and experimental cricket, such an idea has merit, even if it is not a test match. Cow Corner got very, very poetic in that one. Brings up Trenery's MC again.
Yes.
You know, he's quite the fan. And we'll just jump over and have a look at the scorecard here. Again, another three-day game. Calloway, 168 in 190 minutes. That's a fair effort. And Collins opening the bat in with and gets 69, so opening partnership of 165. And the total at the end of the first innings, they declare 8 for 650, with, you know, Palu getting a ton, like we heard, Lampard getting 83. Jack Gregory batting at, what's that, 7? Getting 49?
That's 8.
8, batting at 8, getting 49.
Yeah, and it gives you an idea of the strength of the team as well. So this is Charles Snip Pellew's first game of the tour.
He's just gotten over the Spanish flu.
Exactly, got over the Spanish flu. But you realise the strength of the team. Charles Pellew, for all of you playing at home, does become a test representative of Australia.
Might. A significant note.
Exactly. Was quite an excellent player as well throughout the 1920s.
Gregory plays tests, Collins plays tests, Calloway plays tests.
Taylor does as well, I think.
Yeah, and
I think that might be it out of that team.
And
Love does, even though he's actually not playing in this game.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure Hammy Love plays test cricket.
Yeah, I think one. Yes, yeah, he does, because does, yeah. Bill Oldfield.
That's right.
Bill Oldfield's about to come in.
Yes,
and he plays for Bill Oldfield. Bill Oldfield's off sick, and like 1930 Ashes or something like that. It's
maybe
it's late 20s.
Maybe even the 28-29.
Yeah, that's 28-29.
But yeah, he does. He
plays Brisbane, I think.
I think it is too. I think he plays one test,
which is, I think it's that one. That one or two games that were played at the
exhibition ground.
At the exhibition
exactly
ground.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, I'm assuming this is not being recorded. I'm just talking off top of my head. Right.
No, I reckon we might leave that bit in.
me whispering.
Nothing really particular of note from the Cambridge bowling.
Well, I'm gonna note Fairbairn here.
Yes, that is of note.
poor bugger bowls 36 overs, concedes 3 for 201, doesn't bowl a single maiden in his 36 overs as well. That on its own is worthy of note.
Takes the most wickets though out of the team.
He does.
Slaughtered.
True. I guess 3 wickets in 36 overs is much better than Gilligan's strike rate of 1 wicket in 33 overs, which is not quite so promising.
But the 130 runs is a lot better than the 200. One, but
it is a little bit.
Basically, yeah, the Australians starting to get slaughter the young students. And we look at Cambridge's first innings, they respond all out, 293. Rotherham not out for 84, playing at number 9.
Yes.
Probably the wrong spot for him.
I think they might have gotten their order the wrong way around here, because Cambridge were 9 for 148 before an excellent partnership between Rotherham and Neumann saw them put on 155 runs. They actually more than doubled their score with the last wicket partnership. So I'm beginning to think that Mr. Morrison, the captain of Cambridge University, may not have put his best batsman in a position to succeed.
Yes. Halloway, Gregory, the bowler of note for the Australians, 6 for 65 off 19 overs. That's not a bad effort to go with his 49 runs that he got as well.
And bear in mind, Gregory back at this time was known to be seriously fast. So
he was, yeah.
The poor youngsters here, back into cricket.
They would have never seen bowling this fast before, probably.
No, they wouldn't have. And it's
they wouldn't have, because there's been no cricket of note for the last 5 years, so...
And it's reflected in Gregory's wickets as well. Out of his 6 wickets, 5 of them are clean bowled, which gives you an indication about... just how difficult he was to face. They could not even lay wood upon his deliveries, and he ran through the middle order of Cambridge's side.
And the one that's caught is caught behind.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah. So one of them managed to get enough of it on to deflect it past the stumps and into the hands of the keeper. So, quite the streak, as he's known. So, obviously, when you're some 360 runs ahead and it's 19-19... and no one even considers resting bowlers.
Yeah, load management is not... I think if people were referring to load management in 1919, it was probably in reference to carrying the shells from the front to the artillery.
Yeah. Cambridge get forced to follow on, and this time all out for 118, with only Wood, the opener, putting up any resistance with his 36 runs. This time it's Docker, who does most of the damage, 5 for 41, and Lampard, 4 for 31.
It shows the strength in depth of the Australian teams, because Docker and Lampard only bowled 13.5 overs and got 1 wicket between them in the first innings. Yeah. This time, they bowl 30 overs between them and get 9 of the 10 wickets to fall. Australia have got a pretty devastating bowling attack here.
Well, here's your load management, because Callaway bowls 25, Gregory bowls 19 in the first, and Collins bowls 16. Gregory 7 overs, Callaway 6 overs, Collins 5 overs in the last. So that's their load management. We'll just go, we'll just put 2 of the other gun bowlers that we've got on. That'll be enough. So bowling depth like you wouldn't believe.
No, and this time Rotherham and Neumann were not able to extricate the Cambridge from their dire situation. And as we said, dismissed all out 118. Australian Imperial Forces win by an innings and 239 runs. That, in any language, in any time, is an ass-kicking.
It certainly is. And that's all we have time for this week. So join us next week when we will be talking about the third week of the AIF 11 Tour. Remember, you can jump onto the website anthonycondon.com. Condon is like London with a C. And have a look at each of these letters with all of the context from where they've come from, with pictures and a whole bunch of other great stuff that you can go and click through and have a look at. Read a lot of the articles from the time that were written at the time. And send me any feedback, any notes, any comments. This is all part of my PhD thesis, and it'll be great to have that kind of feedback coming through when I go to writing up my justification as to why I'm doing this for a PhD thesis, which they will make me do. Also, remember to have a listen to the introduction week if you didn't really understand what's going on. That's all for now. Thanks for being here, Cam.
Absolute pleasure. Look forward to seeing you next week, Anth.
And thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bloody ball.
The bane of every true blue fan is the bad ex-cricketer anchorman. It's the same old words in the same old voice. Long past time there was another choice, like the white line wireless.
White line wireless.
White line wireless.
White line wireless.
From the box of dreams you're gonna hear the call. Oh, Bob, oh, Bob. bloody ball.